My doctors never talked to me about lymphedema. When I started personally having symptoms, I thought cancer was coming back and I thought I was having breast cancer.
People are just left to figure it out on their own or just assume that this is the new normal when it shouldn't be.
What are these key warning signs that people should really look out for?
Let's say breast cancer, melanoma cancer, anything in this upper quadrant. I have people get to know their bodies, looking at the bony marks on their hands, on their wrists, on their elbows, and you start to see swelling. Those are things that we look for first.
Can lymphedema be preventable?
There are things that we can do to lower the risk. There have been cases that we've been able to reverse it and get rid of it before it starts going. The best thing you can be doing is just please, let's keep it simple so that someone can be consistent and feel good about that.
Hey everyone, it's Michelle and welcome back to Cancer Proof Living. Today's episode is extra special because we're kicking things off with some amazing news. I'm announcing the winner of our huge $750 wellness giveaway. My way of saying thank you for being a part of this incredible community. So without further ado, drumroll please. The winner is Sarah Luscombe. Congratulations. I'm so excited for you. You just won over $750 worth of wellness goodies to help keep building a low-toxin, healthy lifestyle. Here's what's coming your way. A $100 Amazon gift card, perfect for stocking up on your favorite wellness essentials. A $100 primarily pure gift card so you can treat yourself to clean, non-toxic personal care products. My Eat to Heal collection, 3 meal bundles designed to support your gut, your hormones, and inflammation, complete with grocery lists, food swaps, and delicious recipes. A free one-on-one consult or Q&A session with me where we can talk about all of your health goals, get personalized tips, and help you feel your best. And lastly, my ultimate low toxin living product guide, packed with all my favorite clean swaps for your home, kitchen, and your body. I mean, that's literally an entire wellness reset in a box. Congratulations, and thank you to everyone again who entered, subscribed, and shared the podcast. Your support literally means the world to me. And if you didn't win this time, don't worry. I have more exciting giveaways and collaborations coming soon. So you make sure that you're subscribed to Cancer Proof Living and follow me on Instagram at revival.health.wellness so you never miss a thing. Congrats again, Sarah, and thank you to this amazing community for being here. Now let's get back to today's episode. Hello, friends. Welcome back to Cancer Proof Living. I'm so glad you're here. I'm Michelle, an 8-year non-Hodgkin's lymphoma cancer survivor, mom, and integrative nutrition health coach. After cancer, I wanted more than just survival, so I built the healing roadmap that I couldn't find. Now I guide survivors and cancer-conscious humans to detox, rebuild, and thrive. On today's episode, I speak with Kelly Sturm. Kelly is a physical therapist who received her doctor of physical therapy degree from the Mayo Clinic. She became a certified lymphedema therapist through close training and is certified by the Lymphology Association of North America. In 2019, Kelly became one of the first board-certified oncology clinical specialists in the United States. She serves as an instructor for physical therapy programs and is a guest speaker at various conferences, programs, and community groups. Kelly has clinical expertise in the rehabilitation treatment of oncology diagnosis, primary and secondary lymphedema, and pelvic health. Kelly is the owner of Cancer Rehab PT, educating, empowering, and bringing awareness on lymphedema, oncology rehabilitation, and physical therapy. I love this episode so much, you guys, because Kelly talks about what every cancer patient and survivor needs to know about the lymphatic system. And she shares so many tips about how to support your lymphatic system. She busts myths around dry brushing using vibrational plates and also shares how you can support your lymphatic system overall for cancer prevention. Kelly also shares details about her breast recovery roadmap, which is step-by-step guidance from surgery to survivorship. And guys, it's totally free. And in this episode, she tells us exactly where you can get it. If you want more simple, science-backed tools like these, subscribe to the podcast so you never miss an episode. There's so much to unpack in this episode, so grab a pen and paper. We're about to get into it. I'm so glad that you were able to join me today. Your expertise is going to go such a long way with this audience. So tell me a little bit about what inspired you to specialize in oncology and lymphedema physical therapy. How did you kind of fall into this career?
Yeah, absolutely. So I've always loved physical therapy, and I went to physical therapy school. I thought, honestly, that I was going to do neuro, so like brain injury, spinal cord injury. And after I graduated, that's what I did for my first year. But I had an opportunity within the healthcare system that I had worked for here in the Twin Cities, Minneapolis area, to start up their lymphedema and oncology, or cancer rehab, we call it, program. And I had a rotation, or like an internship, in PT school that was on their oncology section, or within their program at the Mayo Clinic where I went to school, and I loved it. I really enjoyed that time. It was just so short, so I didn't think much of it, but you know, it tied back to that opportunity. I said, you know, I really enjoyed that. Let me give this a shot. And I fell in love with cancer rehab and lymphedema and all of those areas so quickly. And it's now what I've been doing for, I don't know, 12 years now. So kind of roundabout way, it wasn't always what I thought I was going to do, but I'm really glad I got this route.
I feel like that's always how it happens too. We kind of just fall into the careers that we're meant to be in too. It's really hard to choose what you're supposed to do for the rest of your life at 18 and know exactly what that looks like. I always say too, like I remember when I got done with my cancer treatments, I said numerous times to all my family, I never want to talk about cancer ever again. I just want to forget this happened. Nobody ever mentioned it. And now it's like the joke's on me.
Yeah, absolutely. Just the only consistent thing is change. That's what I always say.
Okay, Kelly. So tell me a little bit about our lymphatic system. Why is it so important, and what does it do for our body and for our overall health?
Yeah, your lymphatic system is just like any other system in your body, but it plays a really important role when it comes to your immune system. And really, detoxing is a term that I like to use. So you have all the blood that comes from your heart down through your arteries to every inch of your body, and then it comes back to your heart through your veins. But some of that blood comes out, and it's fluid, it's proteins in the fluid, and it's lymphatic fluid is what it is. And your lymphatic system brings it back towards the heart. But before it gets back to your heart, that's what filters out for bacteria, harmful to things, cancer, you know, anything that's harmful for your body. Your lymphatic system is what really cleans it out, per se, to make sure we pull out all the bad stuff before it gets back in into your heart. So your lymphatics, if they are damaged, if they're not working correctly, or whatever that might be, someone isn't born with them, then we're looking at a backup of fluid, which is lymphedema or lymphatic dysfunction. But then we think about things like your immune system not working up to speed, per se, or how we really want it to.
Because the body is just kind of getting contaminated over and over because it's not filtering out all the bacteria and toxins that you're talking about.
Yeah. So a lot of people, like I said, fluid is the biggest thing we see, but people also talk about feeling sluggish, you know, feeling slow, feeling brain fog is another one. And there's actually some new research and some new surgeries out there that are showing that the lymphatics in the brain, we call the glymphatics, is very similar. It's a very new finding, but they work the same. And so they're doing procedures and surgeries to open those for people with like Alzheimer's and other neurological diseases right now, which is very, very new. It's doing case studies right now. It's just showing how important this system is as a whole.
Yeah, it sounds like it's really just the key piece of everything too. If it's touching our immune system, it's touching our heart, it's, you know, kind of that immune surveillance of getting rid of the bacteria or cancerous cells and things like that. So the lymphatic system, it sounds like it's a very much integral part of our entire health system that our body is so good at doing, right?
Really, it does. It definitely is. It plays a large role in just keeping us healthy.
So you've been doing this for 12 years, and tell me a little bit about like your clientele. You work with cancer patients and survivors, and kind of what's your ideal client when people are walking in? What are the symptoms and what are they experiencing?
Yeah, so really, two things. I am formally just an oncology physical therapist. So I treat those sometimes before treatment starts, but most often during treatment or even after treatment. And that can be years or even decades later. Really come to me with any of the side effects or symptoms that come along with cancer or cancer treatment. So we're thinking like fatigue, pain, loss of range of motion, tightness from radiation, whatever that might be. And with that, one of the side effects for a lot of cancer surgeries, especially if you had lymph nodes taken, is lymphedema. So I'm also a certified lymphedema therapist. So I treat those who have lymphedema from cancer, but I do also treat those who maybe were born with lymphedema or have it from a different reason.
Okay. I didn't realize you could be born with lymphedema.
Yeah, about 20% are it's genetic or something born with, and 80% is something caused in their life, like lymph nodes taken for cancer treatment.
Sure. No, that makes sense. Okay, so that makes sense. I know for me, like when I always thought it was weird because I thought that when you are done or going through treatments, or sometimes when you're done with treatments, if you didn't experience lymphedema right then and there, then you probably weren't going to have it. And for me personally, I had a stage 2 non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, and I had a large tumor pressing against my heart on my left side. So after chemo, I had residual scar tissue. I had 4 blood clots in my left arm, so like that impaired my left side as well. And then I had a surgery in my armpit, which they thought was they were taking a lymph nodes, but it ended up being excess breast tissue. So that all happened right after treatments. Fast forward like 5 or 6 years, that's when I started experiencing lymphedema. It was not immediate. It wasn't right after. And I kept asking my doctors, I'm like, but isn't this weird? Shouldn't this have happened like right when treatments ended? How is this happening now? And to be fair, I, at the same time, just gave birth to my second daughter, and I had found out I had Hashimoto's. And I had a lot of, like, pregnancy for me after cancer was very hard on my body. And my oncologist was like, I'm not going to tell you not to have more kids, but you probably shouldn't have more kids just because the inflammation was so much on my body. And so I know I had like a lot of inflammation and things I really had to clean up and take care of in my lifestyle. And I think it made it worse because once I got the Hashimoto's reversed and under control, the lymphedema went down by like 95%. But I didn't realize it could happen later and after. Is that common? Is that not common?
Yeah, it happens. I would say it's more common, yes, to see it sooner, but we definitely see it later. Really, someone is at a lifelong risk if they've had lymph nodes taken or they've had radiation to the area, you know, like damage the lymphatics, that kind of thing. The biggest risk is that first year or two when we see a lot of change, but like you said, there's sometimes that something happens in someone's life or a change with medically that can trigger lymphedema come on. And I would say the most common that we see is something like an infection. Someone has some sort of systemic or internal infection that happens for whatever reason, and that triggers something in the body with inflammation, and that can happen. So we don't see it as often as we do, you know, that first year or two out, but it is really important for someone just to be aware of, because we still want to address it as soon as possible if someone does notice it down the line, because it's a lot easier to treat at that point.
No, I think that's a really good point you bring up. I think being in tune with your body and knowing how to go inward and connect and slow down and really pay attention to your symptoms and what you're experiencing, especially if you've gone through treatments, is just so incredibly important. I think it's one of the best pieces of advice going forward for anybody, is just really being able to listen to your body.
Yeah. And I just love to give people grace, because you don't know what you don't know. And so for me, and my passion of why I started what I did is I can think of one individual who came to me from a different state who had full lymphedema in her arm for 4 or 5 years and never heard the word lymphedema until she walked in. But it's not her fault. No one ever told her that was something to look for. So for me, it's why cancer rehab and physical therapy is so helpful, is because our goal is really to help educate you on what to look for, what things can happen, what side effects are something that like we expect and can treat versus something that, hey, we'd like to talk to your doctor with. You know, it's just we're trying to help navigate all of this information with you at once.
No, that makes complete sense. And to be fair, you know, my doctors never talked to me about lymphedema. I had no idea. And when I started personally having symptoms, I thought cancer was coming back, and I thought I was having breast cancer because I had the tingling and the numbness that was like crawling under my armpit into my left breast. And I would be sitting there just watching TV, and then all of a sudden there's all this tingling and heavy, really a heavy feeling. And I was completely starting to spiral because I'm like, I didn't even have breast cancer. What's going on? And why is this affecting my breast? And so when I went in and was talking to my doctors and after numerous MRIs and tests and everything, they're like, oh, it's probably just lymphedema, like kind of no big deal. I was like, well, whoa, whoa, whoa. Like, what's causing this? What's triggering this? I need to know everything. And I think I got more answers from doing my own research, but you're right. A lot of people don't know that this can exist, this can happen, and what the signs and the symptoms are. So in your opinion, what are the common side effects that cancer patients or survivors are faced with post-treatment that you can really help with?
Yeah, that's a really long list, but some of the most common besides lymphedema is fatigue is by far the most common. It sounds so simple and sometimes think I could just rest. What can therapy do for me? But there is a lot that we can do to help improve fatigue. So that one's common. Any symptoms or side effects from radiation. So tightness is a big one. We call fibrosis, which is really similar to scar tissue. We could deal with scar tissue from surgery. People have a change in muscles, loss of range of motion, you know, how they function can change as well. And then we get into more specific areas depending on what kind of cancer it is. Gynecological cancers, there we do like pelvic floor therapy with them. Same thing with prostate cancers. So we can kind of specifically look at each cancer and what side effects typically come with them. But anything you can think of that has to do with physical movement or what you're feeling physically, therapy typically can help with that.
You know, that's amazing. I wish I had that going through treatments too, because I don't know one cancer patient that is not feeling at least fatigue at the end of the day when going through something.
Yeah. And I think the research says like, there's an average of 3 or 4 long-term symptoms or side effects that each individual who have had cancer go through. And that's, you know, 2, 3, 4 too many that, again, my goal is just to let people know that there is something we can do to help. It may not be 100% back to how someone feels before, but I feel very strongly that we can bring it down a few notches to how intense those symptoms or side effects are and how much they affect someone's life.
Sure. And you're kind of getting in front of it too, right? And dealing with it as it's happening versus waiting until it's too late.
Right. And I will say it's never too late to try to address it. So someone's maybe listening to this and saying, no, I've had this tightness for 10 years. I've had people treated 35, 40 plus years out from their cancer treatment. And cancer treatment 30, 40 years ago is very different than it is now. Sometimes more intensive because they weren't controlling things as well. And there's still progress being made, less pain, better motion, better quality of life because of it. So again, it is never too late to try to address something, but it is easier, yes, to address it sooner than later.
Yeah, no, for sure. So do you take on patients individually or do you work with the healthcare system, with hospitals and treatment centers?
Yeah, that's a great question. My first decade, 10 or 11 years, I worked in a hospital system and we had an outpatient specifically. So I would see people in my clinic that we also had therapists who were in the hospital. So when someone is in their inpatient stay, they would be treated. And then in the last 1 or 2 years, I have transitioned to private practice. So I still see patients in my clinic just as I would, but in a different setting.
Wonderful. My gosh, you're probably such a help. I can only imagine how grateful the people that you're working with are, because when you can navigate something differently and start to feel better, or if you're dealing with symptoms that are lasting or ongoing for years and you feel like, gosh, this is just going to be my new life after cancer or my new quality of life, and you think you can't do anything about it, and then you realize you can, it's such a game changer.
Yeah.
So I just think that the work that you're doing is so important, and you're helping so many people, probably way more than you even know too.
And I think that's my hope, is it's really that I know there's not enough of therapists who are trained how I am out there, but I also know that there are a lot more than people realize. And it's really that patients don't know that we exist unless someone tells you. And you don't know, like, hey, there's someone who can help you unless someone tells you. And so a lot of times, like you said before, you're doing your own research to try to figure this out. And so it's my goal is, can I put this information into saying, hey, yes, someone can help. This is what it is. This is who you need to see. And then someone can self-advocate or advocate for their family or friend to get that help that does exist. It just sometimes need a little bit more digging.
Yeah, no, you're right, because it's not advertised. I didn't even know if...
No.
So I did my treatments through Northwestern here in Chicago. I don't think I mean, no one told me about PT. No one told me about any kind of lymphatic anything. I had no idea, never heard the word, was so completely unaware of it. So, and that's a huge, huge hospital system and a great hospital system and a teaching hospital, right? So it just goes to show you that we have to, like, people have to find us. We have the resources to help people because we understand the struggle. But I wanted to ask you, was there a moment working with patients that changed the way you think about recovery and survivorship?
It really does come back to that similar story I said before, but I had a couple scenarios like that. So I'm in the Twin Cities in the Minneapolis area, and we have really great healthcare here. We are very lucky to have that, and I'm well aware, but I was also very naive to think that was the same everywhere. Mm-hmm. And I understand now very quickly after seeing people coming from out of state that that's not the same. And so for me, it's just realizing that, like you said, not everyone automatically gets referred to go see a therapist to look at all these or talk about, hey, these are lymphedema symptoms. This is lymphedema. This is what to do. People are just kind of left to figure it out on their own or just assume that this is like the new normal when it shouldn't be. And so just looking at survivorship of a lot of it is, unfortunately, we're at a point, it's still a lot of self-advocating of someone needing to speak up for themselves. And I wish it wasn't that way, but realizing that the best thing I can do at this point is just to get more awareness out there of ways that people can work their way through their own recovery process or journey.
Yeah. And this is just a tool to help them do so. 100%.
Right.
Yeah. So in your opinion, you know, most survivors, I can speak on this, in cancer patients, we are told to rest, you know, rest during treatments, don't overdo it and everything like that. Let your body heal. But in your opinion, why is movement and physical therapy so critical instead?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm one, and you'll hear me say this a lot probably, is I like to make sure that people have some grace because it's a lot to take on. And yes, there's going to be time that you do need to rest and you don't have to do it all. But when we look at, hey, I have fatigue or I'm really struggling with whatever side effect that might be, but fatigue is by far the most common. The research actually shows that exercise and movement is, by a long shot, the most effective way to combat fatigue when it comes to cancer-related fatigue. And that can be something simple as going for a walk for some people. We, of course, can go further along with that for those who are ready for it. But they have compared that to medications and rest, and exercise still comes out on top. So it's really just letting people know that there's a lot you can't control when it comes to cancer. You don't control a lot. And people I know feel that very deeply. But I hope that we can empower someone and give them something they can control. And hopefully with exercise, it's something that they can do for themselves to help feel like they are part of this process and have a lot more control in a way to work through these side effects and these symptoms.
Yeah, no, I agree. You kind of hit the nail on the head. We feel so out of control in so many different aspects. I actually think cancer made me kind of a control freak because when something's so out of your control or whatever the case is happens to you, all you want to do is start to control everything else around you because it's such a traumatic experience. So giving people the tools of saying, hey, this is one thing you can do to help. This is how you can move forward. This is how you put one foot in front of the other. Because unfortunately, when we're going through treatments, there's not a lot of support. And then when we end treatments, there's 100% zero support for aftercare. So you're kind of getting released into the wilds and you're not sure what to do, what to eat, how to exercise, your gut's destroyed. There's so many issues that we are dealing with and faced with. So in your practice, what are some of the tools and resources that you use to help people? Obviously, there's exercises, but say someone's going through, you know, a bad case of lymphedema. And I know we talked a little offline that you treat cancer patients with all different types of cancers. It's not just one. But I know breast cancer probably has a little bit more of the lymphedema connected to it. And correct me if I'm wrong, but what are the resources and tools that you use to help guide somebody through the struggles that they're feeling after, say, radiation and surgery?
The best thing that I can possibly do is to sit down and first listen to what it is that they are struggling with, and then go through them one by one and show whatever that might be, the exercises, the treatment, the ways to manage for each one. Because again, you don't know what you don't know. You don't know, is this something I should be feeling? Should I not? What is this a side effect of? And it's, I would never expect someone to be able to do that. And to be honest, it's not all doctors, you know, understand that either. And so when it comes to during treatment and after and the side effects, it's what are you feeling? So someone's saying, I'm feeling, you know, heaviness and aching in my arm. Well, I will look at that, measure it, see if we're looking for lymphedema, or maybe it's a nerve issue from, you know, the surgical area, or maybe it's from radiation. That's something that I can help figure out for them and then give the tools. So it's exercises. It might be compression for lymphedema. We might be doing some hands-on massage, like release when it comes to scar tissue or fibrosis from radiation. It varies so much when it comes to what it is, but there's always some sort of treatment that we can do for each type. And again, that list is so long, and I don't even think we could go through it all in an hour, but it tends to be a lot of exercises that someone can do in the clinic and that someone can do at home.
Okay. So for lymphedema, first, like, what are some of the biggest myths around lymphedema, and what do people really need to know about it, in your opinion?
Yeah, when it comes to lymphedema, there's a lot of fear, and rightfully so. Lymphedema, unfortunately, does not have a cure right now. It is lifelong. We have learned that we can really manage it very well, especially if we catch it early, so that's a positive for it. One thing that I want people to know that I hear a lot is lymphedema can only be caused in the area that someone had lymph nodes removed or radiated, whatever that looks like. So, for example, if someone had, we'll say, breast cancer, and in their right side, and they had lymph nodes taken from the right, their left side is not at risk for lymphedema, or their legs are not at risk for lymphedema. So it's really only that specific area. Same thing for lower body gynecological cancers. It could be that you have lymph nodes taken on both sides. So yes, you're at risk for both legs, but your arms won't. So when someone's looking, they really need to only focus on that one area. That is a big one that I hear a lot.
Can lymphedema be preventable?
There are things that we can do to lower the risk. It's not 100%. If someone even has one lymph node taken, technically there's a risk there. It's like a 1% risk. It's a very low risk. But I still want someone to at least know what it is and know what to look for on the very, very small chance that it happens, because we have learned if someone is at a lower risk, maybe they've had 3 or 5 lymph nodes taken, something small, and they start to see swelling. If we address it early, meaning put them in the proper compression for 3 or 4 weeks, do some other treatments, there have been cases that we've been able to reverse it and get rid of it, you know, before it starts going.
Oh, wow. Okay.
We've seen it. It's not for everyone, so I don't want to say that everyone, we can stop it. But for those who have maybe a lower risk in the big picture and we catch it early, we've been able to stop it in its tracks.
When you say stop it in its tracks, meaning it's never going to come back, you've kind of taken care of it, the body has...
Yeah,
rehealed or found different pathways to move.
Yeah. You think about, like you said before, there's still an inflammatory process. And so some people, inflammation comes up and we're just kind of helping it through, get through that. And then people are great. We still, of course, want them to watch it very closely. But we have had plenty of cases that it has gone away and never seemed to have come back. We also have had cases that it comes back a little bit, a couple years later. We get right back on the treatment, and then it's very, very minimal. So again, if someone didn't know that, know what to look for, know who to call, like, that's something that, you know, they are not getting the proper care that they need to work through that. So again, the biggest thing we can do is just give people knowledge of what this is and what to look for.
Okay, so say that somebody's listening and they're going through treatments and they're like, oh, okay, well, I've had a lymph node removed. I've had radiation. Of course, I feel different. I don't know how I feel. I don't know what's going on. What are these key warning signs that people should really look out for so they know how to call you?
One of the biggest things is when I try to see someone after they've had surgery, no matter if we have signs or not, because I want to teach them prior. But what I teach them is, if you're thinking about the upper body, so let's say breast cancer, melanoma cancer, anything in this upper quadrant, I have people get to know their bodies. So looking at the bony marks on their hands, on their wrists, on their elbows, and you start to see swelling, it will kind of look more rounded over. Like you won't see those bony tendons sticking out, and it'll be very obvious side to side. You might have jewelry that fits tighter, clothes that fit tighter, or you might just feel heavy, just feel different. All of a sudden, there's a couple different ways to look at that. But if someone has any of those signs or they're just concerned, I just make sure people know you're never wrong to just call and check. But those are things that we look for first. Lymphedema comes on, it can come on quickly, but it doesn't come on like overnight all of a sudden. Those are usually signs of infection that come on within like a couple hours. But it's still something that you gradually see increase. So that's the biggest one. Then same thing for lower body. You know, do they see a little more fullness around the knees, around the ankles, around the foot, even the breast and chest area, and then head and neck cancers as well. Those are the main signs I have people watch for.
I'm so glad you mentioned that. I think it's so important. I know for me, when I started, even after cancer, and my husband thought I was crazy because I would put a shirt on and my left arm, I'm like, everything feels just a little bit tighter around my left arm. And I'm like, I can tell because I'm looking at my arms, but from the naked, my husband's like, you're crazy. You're not just gaining weight in one arm and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, no, something's off, right? And I could just feel it. I didn't know I had 4 blood clots going on in my left arm, which probably contributed to that. But even after treatments and now I deal with lymphedema every day. You know, there's certain things that I do, but if I go out to eat, if I'm sluggish in my routines in any way, I can absolutely feel the heaviness that you were talking about. I can tell that like my tricep muscle looks different than my right side. It's not as defined. So those were definite warning signs for me. And then I think when it started to get worse and creep towards my breast is when I got tingling and just these kind of weird sensations. So it is worth it to make note of it and put those symptoms down like in your notes, in your phone. So when you go to the doctor, you ask for a referral or whatever the case is, you know kind of exactly what's going on. And I want to say too, you're not crazy. People might be like, I love doctors. They saved my life. So this is not a knock on any doctors. But the amount of times I was told, no, it's just in your head, or you're just thin, so it just looks different on your body. And I'm like, no, something is wrong. Something is off. Why would this happen all of a sudden? And I would dig further, you know, what's the root cause, or why did this happen? Why did it happen 5 years later? And, you know, really kind of making these connections and questioning things. And there wasn't a lot of answers. But I will say this, if you feel something, you are not crazy and it's worth it to pursue it. Any kind of symptom, any kind of change in the body, because it means something. And, you know, like you're saying, Kelly, like you can do something about it and you don't have to live. When I started to put some of these lymphedema practices in play, I'm like, oh my gosh, I feel like a different person. And when I was bringing the inflammation down in my body, it's like, this is why it's all connected. This is why it's so important. So it's so true out there that there's something that you can do about it.
Absolutely. And it's a lot to take on yourself. So if you're not sure, like, I think it's nice to have someone early on, either someone to support you, walks alongside of you, so that if something comes up that you're not trying to figure it out on your own. Someone who knows your history, has been working with you for a while. For therapists, we do measurements early so we can remeasure if we need to check. It's just nice to also bounce that off of someone else that has been walking alongside of you for a while.
I agree. It really is nice. And then they help you stay a little bit accountable too and understand and start to connect the dots. Sometimes we're so in it that we get blinded by like, oh yeah, that did happen, or oh yeah, that is a connection. Okay, so then what's your take on like lymphatic massages, vibration plates, dry brushing, and rebounding? Are these all health hacks, or do you really feel like they play a big piece in managing lymphedema in your lymphatic system?
Yeah, that's a really good question because it's something I get asked a lot. And I will be honest, my answer may have been different 10 years ago than it is now, because we do lymphatic drainage as far as lymphedema treatment we have for decades. Lymphatic drainage has become a little bit of a wellness fad, I will say, in the last few years. So there's a lot of confusion around it at this point. So medically, it is helpful because we are moving lymphatic fluid and we're doing it for a purpose. Most people's lymphatics are healthy and they don't need to add in all of this extra stuff. If it feels good for them, absolutely, but there's no harm to it. When it comes to lymphedema, we have to think a little bit more medically. So lymphatic drainage, we do. We try to teach someone at home if we can. If they can't, some people qualify to get a compression pump, which is, it looks like those recovery pumps, but it's specifically for lymphedema. You can't get it like on Amazon or anything. And then some of the other things, you know, there's no literature to say, yes, this helps lymphedema. But what I have learned is that some of my patients who have done them truly feel that they have helped. And I am not one to say no if they're, you know, we don't have research on it. Well, there's a lot of things we don't have research on. As long as it's safe for someone, first and foremost, I know it's helpful to rebound. I know that it can be helpful. Vibration plates, if someone's not in active cancer at the time, I know those things can move lymphatics. So it can be helpful. But it's not the first thing that I go to as a lymphedema therapist if I'm actually treating lymphedema. So it's a balance. It's not one of the main treatment options, but some people really find benefit. And I say as long as it's safe for them and they've noticed the difference, then go ahead.
Okay, so that's interesting. So I don't know if you've heard, since we're both in the Midwest, there's a center by me, I'm in Downers Grove. I'm in a suburb of Chicago, but it's National Lymphatic Centers. Mm-hmm. We have like a few different locations and I go there, I'm obsessed, and I do lymphatic drainage massages. And the lady that owns the centers, she's been doing this for 30 years. She patented her own technique for lymphatic, and they do pre and post surgical, they do oncology, and then they do, you know, anybody in general, and survivors, obviously. Like how I feel going in versus coming out after lymphatic massage when I feel like my lymphedema is getting a little high is like night and day. It's completely night and day. But it's like this, you know, it's not a long-term thing. You have to keep going with it. So I understand what you're saying, where it's like, yes, it can be more fad, or I've had lymphatic drainage massages where nothing happened. It was so useless. It was so ridiculous. I'm like, that was so much money for nothing, like no result whatsoever. So in my personal opinion, if you're going to do a lymphatic massage, you want to do it with somebody who's so qualified, who knows exactly what they're doing. And I'll say like the center that I go to, because they do pre and post op, you know that they have to drain, you know, if they're, you know that it's more of a medical procedure for them versus anything. So be aware of where you're getting these lymphatic massages. Sometimes if you go for the good deal, you know, you're not necessarily getting the full benefits.
Yeah, that's a really good point. For when it comes to lymphedema, someone really should be a certified lymphedema therapist. That means they've gone through extensive training and not just a one-day class kind of thing. So that's something I would look for, because a certified lymphedema therapist can be a physical therapist, occupational therapist, even massage therapist can go through the training, but it's a lot excessive. It's more training.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something to look for. But I like your point of it's a little overwhelming, because lymphedema therapists, we will always start with what we know literally works. It's compression bandaging, or maybe compression garments, lymphatic drainage, exercises, that kind of thing. But then from there's so many different tools out there, and they may work well for one person, but not for another. And that's really hard for me to say, this is what everyone should be doing, because it's not true. But I like to look at each person and say, you know, like, what do you enjoy doing? Do you enjoy exercise? Okay, maybe rebounding is a great route for you. Do you not enjoy it? Or do you like to do more lounging? We look at more at the pump, or we look more at just sun self lymphatic drainage. So there's a lot of tools in the toolbox, and each person's going to be different. So they all can be helpful, but again, they're not for everyone.
No, that's such a smart disclaimer because we're all bioindividual. Just like all of our cancers are different, our bodies are different, how we respond, our emotions, our treatments, how we recover, our age. It's not a one-size-fits-all. 100%. You really have to be an investigator of your own health and see what feels good, what's actually working. It's the same thing with diet. There's not one diet that's the best diet for every single person out there because we all have different sensitivities. We have different guts. We have different reactions. You know, there's a million different things we could go over. It's the same thing for this. So I think that's a really smart thing to say. Just because something works really well for me doesn't mean it's going to work really well for you. But knowing these are the tools that I can explore if I have lymphedema, these are the resources that I have. Let's figure it out. So you've mentioned like certain exercises a couple of times. What are some good exercises for someone that's like, say, has upper body lymphedema? And then what are some exercises for someone that has lower extremity lymphedema?
That's a good question because historically we, as therapists, were trained to do just really basic movements. So like, you know, doing bicep curls and open and close the hands. And as we've come along in these last few years, we're finally getting some more research to help prove that actually we really should be doing a little bit more. Like strength training is really beneficial. When you have fluid that sits around the muscles for so long, it can change your muscles. And for some people, I have seen it firsthand. So my patients just lose a lot of strength. And so strength is beneficial for multiple reasons, but lymphedema as well, because we know for a fact that your lymphatics are moved through your body from your muscles. So it makes sense to do strength training. It doesn't have to be anything crazy. Even a couple pounds at a time and gradually building up to like 5 pounds can make a difference. But we like to go through all of the areas. So I like to do shoulder movements, elbow movements, hand and wrist movements, and I try to just pick exercises for that. So bicep curls are great, but I like to add a couple pounds at a time if someone is there. Anything, shoulder presses overhead, again, if someone doesn't have shoulder issues, all of that is going to be helpful. There's actually really not a wrong exercise out there as long as someone is using all of their muscles. But I like to focus like lower body on things that people do. Like squats, you get up and down from a chair every day. And so think of functional things, going up and down stairs. So it's like step ups or lunges, mimic that. Again, picking things and movements that use large muscle groups, a lot of muscle groups, and that you do most days.
So does exercise kind of act as like the pump that will help pump through? I know we always say like, you know, we don't have a pump in our lymphatic system. So deep breathing is a pump, but it sounds like but from what you're saying, that exercise is also a good pump to get things moving and flowing better too.
Yeah, exercise is actually the best pump because it's your muscles throughout your body that really move the lymphatics. Your breath helps too, but it's really more focused on the truncal area where you think about your hands. Your breath's not probably going to affect your hands as much, but your movement will. And so, yes, exercise is by far the most important. Breath definitely adds in there too.
Interesting. So I was told once not to exercise my left side as much. And that if I like lift something, I could put my left side, my left arm into like a spasm or like have a episode where the lymphedema like flares up and things like that.
Yeah, that was very true. Definitely 10 plus years ago. That was what they said. Don't lift more than 5 pounds or you're going to cause lymphedema.
Yes. And I'm like, I work out. I strength train 4 days a week. And it's so weird because my left side is always weaker than my right side. I also almost think it's subconscious at this point, too, because I've been told so many times it is going to be weaker. It's not going to be the same. And you won't be able to get to that point or don't lift as much. So I'm always a little confused, like, okay, like, if I'm doing 20 pounds on this side, do I have to do 15 on this side or, you know? And I'm glad that you said that too, because the outdated information versus what we're finding now, I'm sure shifts, just like everything can shift. But you know, there's so much noise out there and it's hard to know, okay, what is actually right, what's valid versus what's not.
Yeah, it's very challenging, especially because we've really transitioned this last 10 years, which is not very long. you know, for patients who were out a little bit ago, it's now different, and that's confusing. The reason is they'd never done research before on it, and so it was more precautionary of not lifting. Now we have research. They have done very, very large, well-known studies now in the last, 15 years, I would say, that looked at individuals who did exercise and weightlift specifically, and it showed very obviously that those who actually did exercise and do weight training, like a progressive, you know, start with no weight, add a pound, add 2 pounds kind of thing, they actually had less of them got lymphedema, is really what it came down to. So we actually know that not only is it safe to exercise and lift weights with at risk being at risk for lymphedema, we actually know that it's helpful. It's now something that can lower someone's risk by getting into exercise, obviously in a safe way. So we're not trying to add inflammation. You think about after you overdo it, what is muscle soreness? Like, what is that? It's actually swelling. It's inflammation. So we're not trying to make someone really sore and cause more fluid in the area, but we want to gradually build them up in a comfortable way. They don't get overly sore, and that can actually lower someone's risk now for lymphedema.
I love it. That's such great information. And I always thought it felt wrong, like exercise is so good for the body. And it's true. It does act like a pump. So I'm glad to hear that. And that's a really good myth to debunk.
Yeah,
for sure. Okay. So if someone's like currently in cancer treatments, what are the top three things they can do to start to safely rebuild their strength and mobility?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is, first off, when we go through the process, like for us, we have to look at each person because we don't know what surgery you had and you have restrictions on what you can and cannot do. So we always look for safety first. From there, what I usually encourage is start with the mobility side, start with the stretching, because sometimes that's where the pain is. That's where the tightness is coming from, is the restriction. So I like to start with a couple exercises that are for stretching or mobility. Whatever that might be. So again, for breast cancer, it tends to be the chest is tight. So we work on opening up the chest or arm above the head. When it comes to lower body surgeries, we look at more core mobility or hip mobility, and then adding in gentle strengthening from there. Again, specific to whatever body part we're working on. It might be just adding a couple pounds and doing some strength exercises or even some body weight things. And then lastly, we just progress and trying to get people back into whatever activity is that they want to do or liked doing before. So I'll specialize exercises specific to what their goals are.
That's nice. And that gives some joy, you know, in the middle of just the storm of cancer, you know, getting back to something that makes you feel good. And I know so many people, I've had so many clients that were like, you know, I wasn't able to do much during treatments. You know, I used to love working out and I couldn't do it because I was just so fatigued and tired. And then they see me in survivorship and we talk about, okay, but you did like it once, you know, getting back to that and talking about obviously how much physical exercise and movement can reduce the risk of a reoccurrence as well, but helping people get back into the swing of things once treatments are over too, it's just so important. But I really like stretching. That's a good one. I feel like it's understated. Even if you don't have cancer, stretching and moving the body, it really is so important. So I really like that one too. So do you think that when you're seeing patients, they're going through cancer, they're dealing with lymphedema, regardless of where it is in your body, that there's certain lifestyle changes in things that they can control outside of just the PT, you know, that's going to help? So you're giving them instructions, but what are some other lifestyle things that people can consider doing to help preserve or put off lymphedema or prevent, I should say, in some way?
Yeah, that's a good one, because that is one of the other prevention things is obesity. And I want to preface saying it's actually severe morbid obesity is a risk factor for lymphedema. So my goal is really just to encourage someone to live healthy. And, you know, if we need to work with a dietitian, a nutritionist, or whoever that looks like for diet, we can add that too. But I just encourage someone to live a healthy lifestyle, you know, eat healthy foods and exercise, because that's going to be helpful overall. It's one of those things, like I said, if someone I'm cautious sometimes saying that, because someone hears the word obesity and feels like being overweight or somewhat overweight is going to add to it. When they look at the literature and saying what caused lymphedema, it is like severe morbid obesity, so mm-hmm. significantly high. So it's not so much that I want to add a fear factor.
When you say severe, what is severe in medical terms?
Yeah, so if we're looking like BMI levels, we're going into the 40s and 50s.
Okay.
So it's pretty high. And really what people should know is when you get to BMIs that high, 50s plus, you can get lymphedema even without any other reason. You can have obesity-induced lymphedema at that point because there's so much pressure on your lymphatics. So it's just that we add that as a risk factor for if someone's now having lymph nodes taken. There's another reason that they could cause lymphedema. So when we're looking at lowering someone's risk, it's really just let's try to get the weight down to a more reasonable level, try to have a healthy lifestyle. And then we look at diet, and there's no risk factor specifically with diet lymphedema, but anything that we consider to be healthy, anti-inflammatory, it's just going to be helpful for overall health. So we look at that as well.
And I think too, it's also going back to knowing your body, right? I feel like I know I was eating so healthy. That's my job. I'm eating so healthy and everything, but there was things that I was eating that was inflammatory to my body in the state that my body was in. And there were signs and signals that I wasn't exactly aware of or paying attention to. So I also feel like just piggybacking off of the bioindividuality piece, you know, knowing your body, knowing what, you know, if you eat something and then you have swollen fingers or getting puffy around the face, you know, it's probably a good indicator that that might be inflammatory. Even if everyone's telling you that is the right thing to eat and that is healthy, it just might not be the right thing for you too.
Yep. And that there's so many factors to that. That's why sometimes it's easier to walk alongside someone who can work through that with you, of help making a plan for when it mm-hmm. comes to diet, because again, it's another thing that can just be a lot to take on your own.
And so when you're working with clients, how long are you working with them? Like, what's the average duration that you're with them?
For myself, when it comes to just the post-cancer oncology symptoms outside of lymphedema, that can range between one session, just because they're doing great. They now know what to look for, know when to call me if they see something, all the way to a few months, depending on, you know, if someone's still in the middle of treatment, you know, they might have months of chemo left or might have radiation and then chemo or whatever that might look like. So I'm usually with them through that process and then after for a few months too. Mm-hmm. And then some people will come back to me a year or two later. It varies on what they need and what their side effects are. But they know that if something comes up, they can call me. And I think that's what the big difference is mm-hmm. versus if someone's going at it alone and never knew that, you know, someone like me exists and they're just trying to figure it out. When it comes to lymphedema, because it is a lifelong thing, I will see someone quite a bit right away, meaning a couple months straight. And then if we can get it under control, we would do probably every 6 months for a year or two. And then maybe once a year, sometimes every 2 years, they'll come into me just to check in.
And so when you're working with them one-on-one at first, obviously you said you were doing the compressions and certain mm-hmm. exercises and things to help. And then once you get in a good place, they kind of have their own homework to keep up with it, I'm assuming. And then you check in kind of after that.
Yep, that's exactly right. We do phase one, which is the treatment they're with me for. And then phase two is more of that self-maintenance, long-term management, and come into me for any flare-ups or tune-ups or just to check in and just see how things are going and update for any changes, new products, new resources, that kind of thing.
And so their homework can really consist of stretching, different exercises, maybe different lymphatic massages they can do at home, things of that nature.
Yeah, so most with lymphedema, they have some sort of compression garment, compression sleeve, compression stocking, compression shorts, compression bra, whatever that might be, that they are using to manage the lymphedema themselves. And then mm-hmm. they'll have exercises, may do lymphatic drainage, or they might have a lymphatic pump to do lymphatic drainage at home instead. And then skin hygiene, general cares, and then, like we said, just healthy lifestyle decisions of diet and movement and activity and even stress management.
Stress management's an important one too, because that mm-hmm. creates inflammation. It's so incredibly important. Okay, so this is maybe kind of an odd question, but when someone's going through chemo radiation surgery, let's say the trifecta, right? Do you feel like they have more damage or more likelihood to get lymphedema? Or do you feel like it's mainly from surgery, mainly from radiation, like, or, you know, not so much from chemo. Is do you see what I'm trying to ask? Like, yeah. Is there any kind of correlation between that and like the recovery piece and symptoms possibly popping up? And I know it's different for everybody, but just from like your experience from what you've seen.
Yeah, in general, the biggest risk factor for developing lymphedema is having lymph nodes taken. So it's that surgical portion. Mm-hmm. And then radiation absolutely adds a layer onto that of risk, especially for those who had radiation directly to where the lymph nodes are. And that varies. Mm-hmm. Some people have like we call a boost to those areas. So that can add another layer. Any area that has radiated, technically you have lymph vessels in those areas. You might not have a lot of lymph nodes, but vessels which can be damaged. So that can add layers. Those two are the big ones. Chemo, there is a little bit of literature that says certain types of chemo drugs can add risk, but mm-hmm. it's not a strong risk. So someone who has those, it's not something that we are, you know, watching like a hawk for, like we are with surgery and radiation, but it's something that we see, yeah, they might have more swelling. So there might be something we need to monitor closer with. But definitely surgery and radiation are the main two.
Yeah, and you did mention that. Removing of lymph nodes is like the key indicator of, okay, something might pop up and happen, and, you know, to be as preventative as possible with that too.
Yeah,
I heard you say earlier too about like nerve damage. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people come out of cancer treatments with neuropathy. Can neuropathy lead to lymphedema, or is there some sort of association or correlation between the two?
There's not at this point. Okay. The nerves are very different from the lymphatics. The only thing that we do see is I'm thinking upper body here, you have a lot of nerves that run through your armpit or your axilla area, which where a lot of surgery radiation is. And so some people have nerve pain that goes down the arm. That's also the area that there was damage in. So the lymphatics could also be, the lymph nodes are also there. So there could be, that looks like they run parallel to each other, but chemo-induced peripheral neuropathy specifically does not cause lymphedema, but someone could see both run in parallel because of where the treatment was or what's causing it.
Yeah, I know. I'm thinking of a couple of clients off the top of my head that had like really, really high dosage of chemotherapy, really, really high dosages. And, unfortunately, it's led to neuropathy in different parts of their body, but also they've also had lymphedema side by side, lower extremities and upper. So I was wondering that too. So that makes sense.
That's when it's not necessarily lymphedema, but it could definitely be an edema or a swelling. The good news is those typically do subside over time. Lymphedema does not. So, you know, good and bad. It's not fun to deal with, but we actually in therapy, which might be good for them to know, is that we still treat them very similar and try mm-hmm. to get them some support to manage the swelling too.
That's good. This might be a little controversial, but how do you feel about like red light therapy and that helping with areas of lymphedema?
Yeah, I just did content on this because I get asked a lot. So really, the red light therapy is another thing that people need to be a little bit cautious when they go on social media for, because it is also now a wellness thing. You know, it's for skin health and whatnot. We do have red light laser in the clinic. Not all clinics have it, of course, but some clinics do. I do. That is approved and to be treated for, specifically for breast cancer, lymphedema. It's been approved. And it's more so because it helps decrease inflammation, decrease scar tissue, which can all affects lymphedema. So we do have it. It is not the exact same kind you can find to have at home. They are different because the ones at home are LED lights. The ones in the clinic are lasers. It's all red light though. There's just different wavelengths of red light. So it can get a little confusing, but know that yes, it is a treatment. You just have to get a little better understanding of what products you're using it or who you're using it with.
So that makes sense. It targets the scar tissue and the inflammation and helps reduce that, which then in turn helps reduce the lymphedema.
That's what they feel like at this time. It's more for that fibrotic scar tissue, which can clog pathways and that thing. That's what's being used for right now, what it's been approved for right now.
Yeah, I use the red light therapy for my scar tissue, like over here, because it helps. And I mean, I'm not sure if it helps with like the lymphedema, but it does like... Yeah. I feel like it helps.
Yeah,
I feel better. Yeah.
There's benefits to it. We just don't know enough that it actually changes the lymphatic system specifically, but indirectly there are things that it can definitely improve with.
Amazing. Okay. So tell me all about the breast cancer roadmap that you have going on and who it's for, what's the purpose behind it. I'm sure this came from all of your expertise that you're seeing on the clinical side, but tell me everything about your roadmap.
Yeah, no, thanks for asking. So I had been sharing content for 5-6 years now, just really for what I talked about before, just I was naive to think that that knowledge was everywhere and that everyone had access. So it's me just trying to bring awareness. And I've always shared exercises that someone can do after surgery or radiation or whatnot, but I've got a lot, so many questions of, you know, what about someone who is just after surgery versus someone who is a year out from surgery? What is, does that different? Do they do the same things? And so I took the last 5-6 months and just tried to create specific exercises, like 5 or 6, like a little routine for all different phases through that continuum. So someone right after surgery, a month or two, 3 months later, a year out, and then a couple more exercise programs for after radiation or after someone who has cording from breast cancer surgery. So it's really just a way for me to organize and help someone walk through, you know, what exercises are specific for what phase. And that's, we know, is going to be different for everyone, but hopefully that helps someone feel like they're, someone's walking alongside of them rather than all of this information coming at them at once and them trying to figure out what they should be doing.
It's honestly genius. It's what we need in aftercare for every different type of cancer and for every individual out there. I feel like this should be it, free info coming from our healthcare system. Personally, that's what I believe. But I also, myself, clients, you know, you feel so alone after cancer and there's so much information being thrown at you. And I think a lot of people are really motivated after cancer. They're like, okay, like this is my fresh beginning. I want to do it right. I want to make sure that I'm rebuilding my body in the right ways and eating the right things. And what happens is that I feel like because we have so much information at our fingertips, we're just like throwing spaghetti at the wall to see what sticks.
Right.
And we're not exactly sure what is working because we're trying so many different things.
Yep.
It's a little different. I'm 8 years out. So when I finished treatments, there was not as much information as there is today. Like today, it's crazy. So I have so many clients that are always like, what do you think about this? And how about this? So we'll have to talk offline about that because it's such an important guide. And it is probably different because our body shifts, right? Mm-hmm. 3 months out after cancer from 3 years out. And how to best support your body going forward, because that is key, especially for lymphatic health when it is plays such a big role in our health, our whole health, and our entire body. It is so incredibly important to keep that pump moving and to be healthy in that way. So
right.
This roadmap sounds amazing. And I know you said it's for breast cancer.
Right.
If someone was listening and they were like, hey, I had ovarian cancer or I had lymphoma or something like that, if they reached out to you, like, would you put together or could you put together like a plan for them or kind of a, essentially their own roadmap to help them navigate, you know, depending on their circumstance and, you know, situation?
Yeah. The roadmap I have is specifically for breast cancer. So all the exercises for more for upper body. So it's really any, like I've had questions about, is it great for someone who had melanoma in the shoulder or that area? And that it could be the same thing for that. It would definitely be a different roadmap for someone with lower extremity or head and neck cancer as well. And those are something I definitely consider if that is something of interest. But again, it's just a way of me of what are the most common exercises that I give my patients when they come to me 2 weeks out versus 2 years out of surgery. And what am I sharing? So just kind of compiling the general main progressions that I'm going to give my patients and then just kind of have someone have access to that kind of walk through as they need to or work with their therapist and walk through them.
Okay. All right. Amazing. You know, one thing I wanted to ask you too was in regards to lymphatic, like opening up your lymphatic drainage pathways, you know, before doing some of these things. So say someone is exercising, they have their compression exercise on, you know, or about to rebound, are we supposed to be opening up our lymphatic pathways before doing some of these like tools and resources that we have? Otherwise, aren't we just kind of like recircling?
I'm going to be transparent, because I know that's a big conversation. Again, there's a little bit of confusion because there's a wellness piece to this, like a fad piece to this right now. So there's a lot of people talking about this. And as someone who's been training and has been treating lymphatic dysfunction, as we call it, for over a decade, the majority of humans have a very normal working lymphatics that can get overrun sometimes with lymphedema or other things. But most of the time, your lymphatics know what to do. So most people don't have to go above and beyond and be doing all of these detailed things each time they exercise. Exercise and work, making sure you're working on your breathing, is enough to do great things on its own. If you want to be doing opening up the pathways with it, absolutely. But I don't want someone to ever feel like, oh, I should be doing this and this and this, and feel overwhelmed to the point that then they don't do it. Because honestly, that's a small piece in the big picture, truthfully, on how the lymphatics function for most people.
Okay.
So is it helpful? Sure. Is it bad if you don't do it? No, it's okay. The best thing you can be doing is just please just get up and move, be active, stay healthy. Those are the number one and two things that someone should be doing, is exercise and making sure you're breathing and managing just stress levels, I will say too.
And when you say breathing and managing, you're talking about deep breathing, the deep belly breathing, that's going to
help. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. Those are helpful. Those have been shown that someone who does deep breathing, it does help the lymphatics. So those are what we know and have been proved over and over. If someone doesn't open up the pathways first, I'll be honest, they probably still work. So again, my thing is, it's not all wrong out there. The information is not wrong, but it can be very overwhelming for someone to feel like they have to be doing more. And the truth is, they really don't. Let's focus on what are the main pieces, and that's just going to get up and move. Getting up and moving is one of the best things you can do. Let's keep it simple so that someone can be consistent and feel good about that.
No, I think that's really important too, because it is overwhelming. You know, you see and read different things where you have to open up your drainage pathways before you dry brush or before you're rebounding. And then before you know it, you have like 15 steps that you're doing every day, which feels overwhelming. And it feels like, how am I supposed to keep up with this? And for anybody out there that has an all or nothing mindset, it's so easy just to give up, versus what you're saying, where it's like, you don't always have to do that. Our body knows exactly what it has to do to be well and to be healthy. Your job is to get up, it's to move, it's to stretch, it's to manage stress and eat healthy. These are all things that you can do to normally just take care of your body for preventative purposes, but then also to help with lymphedema and just recovery in general as well.
Yeah. I just like to take a step back for those people who feel overwhelmed by it. If someone feels really good and say, I can do all of it, absolutely. Go for it. It's great. But there are a lot of people who it just feels overwhelmed by it all, especially with everything, especially if they're in the middle of cancer, but they can't do it all. And so let's just pick those one or two things that move the needle the most. And the first one is just going to be gentle movement. Just move in some way.
Oh my gosh. Yes. If you're going through treatments, giving yourself grace and taking it slow, like there's no way you can take on a 15-step lymphatic routine.
It's a lot.
It is extremely overwhelming. So yeah, I think that's a really good point. Okay, well, this has been so great. I really appreciate your expertise. I think that you're a wealth of knowledge. And I think what you're doing with this roadmap and the information that you're putting out there is just, it's so helpful and it's so incredibly important to so many people. Tell everybody where they can find you if they have more questions or if they want to work with you. Do you do anything virtually as well?
I don't at this time. I just locally here one-on-one, but I try to my best to give as many free resources out there as possible. So the roadmap we spoke about is free. You just have to sign up. You're going through it step by step. The first step goes out October 2nd, and then I will send out a new one in your email every couple of weeks until the whole thing's live, and then you always have it. And then my YouTube, Cancer Rehab PT, same thing on Instagram. My website is cancerrehabpt.com. Again, just hopefully someone can find some sort of resource, video, whatever that might be, that is helpful for them.
Yeah, no, that's great. And your Instagram is so wonderful. You give out so much free advice. Anybody that's listening, she does demonstrations on exercises and movements and things like that. So if you're not sure where to start and you don't know what to do, you can always just go to her Instagram or her YouTube page and start, you know, slowly, and just start with one thing, and slowly, as that becomes consistent, add something else and follow her advice with just getting up and moving, being first and foremost, and giving yourself grace if you are going through treatments.
Yeah. And another thing is just to see if you can find someone PT local. There are a lot around, and I just think there's nothing that can be beat with just one-on-one support when someone needs it.
Oh my gosh, absolutely. I think every treatment center should have one of you in there. And I don't even know if they do.
A lot don't, but there are a lot that do, like Northwestern does, and you just didn't get that access. So it's just, that's the thing is, unfortunately, we have to be our own advocates and we have to be advocates for our friends and family. And so that's really just our goal, is to ask questions and see what resources are available for someone.
So this is your sign out there. Be an advocate for yourself. Yeah. Know that there's help. Know that there's resources. Not to mention that this roadmap is completely free, which is insane. I mean, I'm going to be referring so many clients to you for this roadmap too, just to have that support. You know, it's such a great place to start. So thank you for making that and just sharing what you're doing and making it more of a topic of conversation, since it's not being held in those doctor's office or when we're being released after ringing the bell and not really knowing what step to take. Because I think that what you do should be an absolute piece of signing off on those treatment papers and exiting treatments. It should be coming right after or during, like you're doing it during too. Integral part of the process. But okay, well, thank you so much for coming on. You guys, check out her pages. You won't be disappointed. And I can't wait. We'll have to have you back. This information has been invaluable. So thank you so much.
Great. Thanks, Michelle. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.